shutting down the Hudson River VFR corridor? Can we talk this over? I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob's a CFI in the Buffalo, New York area, and we're here to talk on Mondays about safety issues. Bob, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks, Paul. It's always a pleasure chatting with you.
I want to ask you about something that you have some particular expertise in that has been in the news the past few days, and that is a little over a week ago, there was a mid-air collision in the Hudson River VFR corridor between a Piper Saratoga and a tourism helicopter that resulted in the deaths of 9 people. The reaction was obviously shock and horror among the general population, but I think it's worth noting that the last time we had a mid-air over the Hudson was 1963. Nevertheless, the politicians in the New York area at state, city, and federal level are all going nuts calling for changes to the way we do business in the VFR corridor. You have been there. How scary a place is this?
Well, Paul, it is the big leagues of congested air aviation. I will say that it's probably the busiest airspace on the globe. But like everything else we do in aviation, if we're trained, if we're proficient, if we keep our eyes open, it's honestly as safe as a walk in the park. I recently took my wife and teenage daughter down through that corridor, and I certainly would not have done that if I thought there was any attendant risk to it. I think the person who said it best is our own Randy Babbitt, the new FAA administrator, and I quoted him in the most recent issue of Over the Airwaves when he said, and I quote, "No matter how many rules, how many regulations, at the end of the day, safety still comes down to one thing. It's us. By us, I mean every pilot." They can call for all the rules they want, but unless the pilot is actually looking out the window and keeping track of other traffic, that's ultimately what's required in that airspace, or any busy airspace for that matter.
You know, I had to liken it to the New York State Thruway, which, you know, goes from Erie, Pennsylvania all the way to New York City pretty much. And it's 400 miles of space on the ground where automobiles and semis interact in crowded space, and we don't have radar controlling them. We've had, you know, people die in the New York State Thruway every week. What is it that sensitizes people to aviation more than any other mode of transportation?
Well, that's a question I've been thinking about a lot lately. What is it about any air disaster? I mean, I've said to some of my buddies around here, we could have a school bus filled with teenagers wrap itself around a street light and with tragic fatalities, and it doesn't get near the attention of an airplane landing off field with a failed engine and minor injuries. There's something about aviation that the public has this enormous love-hate relationship with, that they love them or they hate them, and it's something that's just something that we in general aviation are going to have to learn to live with.
Well, now let's talk about the accident and exactly what happened. As far as we know at this point, it would appear that a fixed-wing aircraft with probably a higher cruise speed than the helicopter, especially if the helicopter was conducting sightseeing operations, were operating at the same altitude on a convergent path at an altitude where radar is not of much use. What are the possible things that went wrong here?
Well, the fixed-wing aircraft, the Piper pilot, took off from Teterboro and was in contact with Teterboro Tower, of course. Once airborne, Teterboro handed him off to Newark Tower, and according to the data that Aero News is reporting, Newark never got the hand, or never he never heard from the pilot, even though he was handed off to Newark. Newark then saw a conflict alert, or received a conflict alert, and attempted to reach the pilot. They could not reach the pilot, so they called back to Teterboro, asking if Teterboro could again reach the pilot. And on the basis of that information alone, it would appear as if the pilot failed to contact Newark Tower as instructed. When we go down there, of course, we don't have to be talking to any air traffic control. That's Class G airspace, mostly below 1,100 feet along the way. And there is an air-to-air frequency, 123.05. But the practice that I use, and the practice that I think most of us use, is we're in contact with either Newark Tower or LaGuardia Tower as we're going up and down the river, simply for traffic advisories. And traffic advisories are there. The controllers that I've worked with down there have been superb. They're always calling out traffic. And it, when the situation gets very busy, they'll just simply say multiple targets at your 12 o'clock, all altitudes. And when you hear that, by all means, you have to keep your eyes open. So, like most such accidents, I believe this one was largely preventable. It's a question of see and avoid, both the helicopter and the fixed-wing airplane. We talk about blind spots in that equipment, but, blind spots are movable. And so we're constantly moving the nose up and down, left and right, clearing the airspace as we move along.
Well, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to liken this to a situation that can happen in your part of the woods. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, talking about the situation in the Hudson River VFR corridor in New York City. And Bob, I recall flying with you over Niagara Falls, and one of the things that I took away from that experience was the seriousness with which ATC keeps altitudes separate for sightseeing helicopters and transient fixed-wing traffic. Is there an answer, something like that, that would work in the New York VFR corridor, or is it just way too packed?
I think it's way too packed. First of all, the Class G only goes up to 1,100 feet. MSL, AGL, which curiously is both the same down there on the Hudson River. So there's only 1,100 feet with which to work with. Over Niagara Falls, the minimum altitude AGL is about 3,000 feet that fixed wings can work with, and the maximum altitude AGL is about 2,000 feet that helicopters can work with. So therein, there's a lot more airspace to deal with. I'm not sure how they could get an altitude separation on the Hudson River corridor. I want to come back to an observation you made earlier, the New York State Thruway. This airspace is packed. There's no question about it. But ATC, in fact, there is a NOTAM out right now, that, and I just checked with Flight Service to see if there was any change in the procedure to operate VFR along the Hudson River corridor. And the NOTAM that's out right now is just reminding pilots that there are four things that it is recommended they do, and these are recommendations. As soon as you're airborne over the river, contact, announce on the air-to-air frequency 123.05 that you're up. Give them your intended course. By all means, have the airplane lit up. In other words, turn all the lights on the airplane so as to be more easily seen, and restrict your speeds to 140 knots or less indicated airspeed. Right now, that's the only recommendations that are out there. And you also pointed out, rightfully so, Paul, that we have not had anything similar to this since 1963. I mean, this is over 45 years of accident-free flying over the Hudson River. So that fact alone should be sufficient reason to move very, very cautiously before attempting to implement any kind of regulatory change. One possibility, and I hope that this will not happen, is that they shut down the VFR corridor and just make the entire airspace class B, which would indicate or which would require a specific clearance for individuals to operate up and down the Hudson River. I think ATC themselves, or certainly the FAA, would be vehemently opposed to that because of the requirement that would put on their staffing to provide that kind of positive separation up and down the river under Class B rules. That would be a very, very onerous requirement.
Well, yeah, there was a former controller who already made that point to one of the New York media that there just aren't enough people or enough places to have them sit down to do that. But Bob, I guess the last question on the topic would be regarding the politicians, and they're kind of going nuts over it. Should there be any changes other than that?
Well, no, I don't believe there should be any changes, but I would like to say for our listeners, you know, we lost Migs Field largely to politicians outside of Chicago or in Chicago. We lost National Airport, Reagan National Airport, to general aviation largely because of politicians. If we lose the VFR corridor, I wouldn't wait. If any of our listeners have always had an inkling to go do that flight, now would be a good time to do it, because once it gets shut down, if that happens, the likelihood of it ever opening up again would be nil. So put this on your things to do list and get up the river if that's what you'd like to do, because this, as I said before, may be, regretfully, the last chance we get to do it.
Well, the FAA has also noted that anybody flying VFR through that area would have a huge detour if this was ever shut down. Bob, thanks very much for your insight. It's great to talk to somebody who actually flies that on a regular basis, and we'll look for you next week.
Thanks, Paul.
You can find the current edition of Bob's newsletter at www.overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.